Chapter 4. Beginnings. The baby's first cries echoed off the high walls of Lyra's chamber. As was customary on Vault, a birth within the walls of the keep was regarded as cause for jubilation, more so in that the birth of the human child coincided with the first day of the spring season. From the courtyard below, rocket bombs were launched into the night, and a small crowd that had learned of the birth and braved the Arctic temperatures was celebrating, gathered around fires and stalls selling skewers of grilled meats and root vegetables, with many of the men seated on low benches, quaffing glasses of strong, home-brewed alcoholic drinks. Gin, as Galen and Lyra had named her, had been placed on her mother's still-heaving chest by one of the midwives to be soothed by her warmth and familiar heartbeat. It had been a long labor, but not especially difficult, and Lyra had been a champ throughout, even when she was snarling at anyone close by. Pale and drenched in sweat after all the hours, she nevertheless seemed to be in better shape than Galen, who was still processing the experience. He asked himself, was there actually some benefit to having been captured? Just about anywhere else, he and Lyra would have been surrounded by well-meaning but all-business droids, in an environment so sterile as to be lifeless. Was it bizarre to feel gratitude? Lighter by a couple of kilos and as fully bearded as most of the Vaultee, in a transparent effort to leave him closer in appearance to his captors, Chieftain Gruppa had never come through with the promised scissors or razors or depilatories. Galen had been released from his cell the moment Lyra's water had broken and been transferred by a Takwa-drawn sled to the keep, chaperoned by two prison guards, whom he assumed would return him to the prison as soon as Jin's cries yielded to sleep. The midwife who had swaddled Jin brought Galen out of his reverie.
"You can remain with Lyra and the child, or give them a few moments to rest."
Lyra nodded to indicate that rest was preferable. He gazed at her.
"I don't know if I have the strength to leave."
"Don't fret,"
one of the handmaidens said.
"You'll be permitted to stay for the night."
In naked relief, Galen leaned over to kiss Lyra on the forehead, Jin on the crown of her head. She was a beautiful girl, a good weight and size and very healthy, according to the midwife who had assessed her. Dark curls were plastered to her scalp, and Galen could already see that she had her mother's mouth. Two of the doting handmaidens escorted him to the chamber's massive wooden door. In a room directly across from the wide hallway, Nerbu, Easel, Tambo, and the rest of his colleagues from the Zerpan facility were waiting to congratulate him with embraces and hard claps on the back, and of course, to get him drinking. All of them were eager to see Jin, but the midwives wouldn't permit it, calling them rumpled, germ-ridden, miscreant wizards, though all in fun. From out of nowhere, a mug was pressed into Galen's hand and quickly filled with a viscid white liquid, and the toasts began, with long swallows following each of them. Galen was near drunk in no time, which would have been the case even if he had been consuming his accustomed calories and hadn't been awake for the past 20 local hours. The drinks, the torchlight, the cheery faces of his friends worked the most nourishing kind of magic on him.
"I thought you were going to name her after me," Nerbu said.
"Now, how would that sound?"
"I'll have you know that Vault has as many female Nerbus as it does males."
Galen didn't doubt it. Nerbu, like Tambo and Easel, was a day designation. The entire planetary population chose among scarcely 2 dozen names.
"Perhaps the next child?"
Nerbu persisted.
"I'll confer with Lyra."
Everyone fell suddenly silent. Galen turned to find Chieftain Gruppa standing behind him. Her stern face broke into a broad grin, and she embraced him harder than the others had and accepted a flagon of the home brew. which he downed in one lengthy swallow. Galen knew the danger of feeling affection for one's jailer, and had gone to great lengths to maintain a safe emotional distance from Grumpa or any of the others. And yet tonight he felt a warmth spread through him that had less to do with the alcohol than a sense that he was among family. As reckless as it was, he had formed a strong bond with the Vaulty, even his captors, even with Grumpa.
"You know we're not your enemy,"
she said after a loud, appreciative belch.
"I'm trying not to think of you that way, but the walls of my cell keep reminding me that I'm a prisoner."
"It's simply circumstance."
Galen showed her a wry smile.
"Even so, chieftain, no one likes to be a victim of that."
She returned a solemn nod.
"A short time ago, Vault was a Republic member world. Now it supports the Separatists. And yet what does any of that have to do with us?"
"It certainly has a lot to do with my ending up in Tambalore prison."
Her eyes narrowed in begrudging agreement.
"Our deal with the Separatists seemed reasonable enough at the time. Support for the coup in exchange for our turning you over to their custody. Now, however, we're not sure we want to lose you."
"More manipulation?"
Galen wondered.
"I've grown on you, is that it?"
She snorted a laugh.
"Your co-workers maintain that the research has continued in your absence. Have you considered simply working for us, Galen? For Vault? Converting the facility into a power station to supply the keep and the entire city?"
"I'm not certain how that would be perceived by Zerpan."
"Yes, I've read the terms of your contract. No involvement in local matters, let alone local politics."
"Unfortunately true."
"And yet where is Zerpan now? Why haven't they reached out to us?"
"Do they even know?"
Galen asked. Grumpa laughed and clapped him on the shoulder.
"The laboratory droid, Assis, was debriefed. We know all about the burst transmission sent to Zerpan in the salient system."
Galen frowned.
"Then I've no idea why they haven't reached out."
"Again, we are not your enemy. We have nothing against you personally. Our issues are with the Republic Senate and Palpatine."
"I also have issues with them."
"Then where's the harm? Remain with us. Help Vault develop. Raise your child away from the strife and noise of the core. We've come to think of you as one of our own, especially now that Jin is a Vaulty, a citizen of our world."
"You pose a good argument, chieftain."
She poured him another drink.
"Rumor has it that the Tribunal will be hearing your case shortly, and,
she lowered her voice,
"that you will be exonerated."
Galen stared at her, afraid to get his hopes up.
"And then?"
"Your confinement in Tambalore will come to an end. You and Lyra and the baby will be reunited."
"And permitted to leave Vault?"
he asked with caution.
"It is too early to promise that. Perhaps Marshal Farah will grant you absolution. A pardon."
Grupper's shoulders heaved in an elaborate shrug.
"Eventually there will be another coup, a new leader. This is the way of all worlds, not only Vault."
"The vicious circle."
Grumpa sniffed and called for another flagon.
"Who knows, Galen?
Maybe Count Dooku or your Palpatine will find a way to break the cycle. Once and for all."
Two white-armored clone troopers escorted Hass Obit from the cofferdam that linked his small freighter to the Republic cruiser. He had thought about turning tail the moment the cruiser had appeared on the scanners, but declining an invitation from a warship that had placed itself directly in his path hadn't seemed the brightest idea.
"When do I get to learn where I'm going?"
he hazarded to ask the clone troopers.
"When you get there,"
the one on his left said. Hass smirked.
You guys are never less than predictable.
Yeah, we're made that way,
the other clone said. A native of remote Dressel, Hass was a dark-complected, tall and hairless humanoid with a furrowed face and a deep cranial groove that ran from the bridge of his nose all the way to the nape of his thick neck. He had been told by humans that his mouth was disproportionately large, but that he had soulful eyes. The rest of him was similar enough to humans that they weren't uncomfortable in his company, nor he in theirs. The clone troopers led him down several broad corridors and through several right-angle turns until they arrived at an open hatchway, which they flanked after motioning him to the cabin beyond. A human officer was standing inside, slightly shorter than Hass, but erect and sinewy, with light brown hair and a narrow face humans probably considered handsome. He wore a white tunic over black pants, tucked into lustrous knee boots. In a corner of the observation bay behind the human, Hass could see the short wings and broad fantail of his ship, aboard which his new crew had to be wondering what their captain had gotten them into. "Welcome aboard, Captain Opit," the officer said.
"Thank you."
Hass's uneasy inflection turned it into a question.
"Commander..."
"Krennic. Lieutenant Commander, actually, but thanks for noticing." The human seemed slightly out of place aboard the cruiser. His uniform was all wrong. So Hass allowed himself to relax. Probably another request for information about separatist ship movements or distribution. Hass made a point to glance around him.
"My first time aboard one of these,"
he said in a casual way.
"And?"
Krennic said, as if hanging on Hass's reply.
Impressive, to be sure. But cold."
Krennic's brows beetled in interest.
"Do you mean cold as in chilly, or cold as in austere?"
"Austere?"
"Severe. Lacking in comfort," Krennic explained.
"Well, I haven't really seen enough of the ship to comment."
"Perhaps we can arrange for a personal tour after we're done here,"
Krennic said, cutting him off.
"It's for sale in any case."
Krennic's dead serious tone made the remark even more outlandish.
Bit out of my league."
Krennic adopted a look of surprise.
"Don't tell me business hasn't been good."
Again, the disparity between the words and the tone left Hass feeling slightly flummoxed.
"Business has been all right."
Krennic frowned.
"Just all right. Are you saying that that supply run to Ryloth didn't earn out? Or that the jump to Helena to deliver munitions didn't pay off? Certainly that clever workaround at Christophsis turned a profit."
Hass started to reply, then thought better of it and began again.
I'm not too proud to admit when I've been outsmarted."
The corners of Krennic's mouth went up.
"Good for you.
Pride is an overvalued quality.
You obviously know more about me than I do about you."
"Indeed I do, Captain. But let's even things up, shall we? What is it you wish to know about me?"
Hass decided he had nothing to lose by asking.
"I guess I'd like to know which Republic agency I'm dealing with, since your uniform tells me this isn't your ship."
"Very observant of you. I'm with the Corps of Engineers." "Maybe," Hass thought, but that wasn't the full answer. "Have you by chance ever put in at Regalia Station?"
Krennic said.
"You probably already know that I have."
Krennic smiled broadly.
"We're beginning to understand each other."
"Regalia is mine. Not mine, of course, but I was chief of the design and construction teams. Have you been to Coruscant recently?"
"Not recently, no."
"I'll give you a list of which of my works to visit on your next stopover."
It was Hass's move, but he declined.
"What does the Corps of Engineers want with me? When you hailed us, you said something about a friendly chat."
"I'm sorry, have I said something to contradict that?"
Hass waited.
"It's simply that I have a proposition for you."
Hass wished he could plug his ears.
Providing intelligence was one thing, but propositions usually led to trouble.
Oh, we're only taking small jobs at the moment.
Krennic was undeterred. I'd classify this one as small, as these things go. Hass exhaled with purpose.
Look, Commander, I'm just a smuggler trying to earn a living, like 1,000 others in this sector alone.
Krennic appraised him. You're actually going to play the humble card. Hass Obit, who has worked with the Jedi Order on several occasions, who has earned a reputation as a pilot to trust with all make and manner of cargoes, who has extricated himself from any number of tight spots. He paused briefly, then added, who is known to make periodic deliveries to Merge. Hass said nothing. You're aware, of course, that Merge is a separatist world, aren't you, Captain? Hass swallowed and found his voice.
We don't deliver anything in the way of weapons or prescribed merchandise. Strictly equipment and supplies.
Krennic scowled. I'll give you that one. But I want to know how these allegedly innocent supplies are delivered. Hass shook his head.
I don't follow.
Walk me through it, Krennic said. You arrive at Merge.
Merge spaceport control clears us to land, Hass began. We land, we offload the supplies.
Do you actually carry them off, or do you use droids?
We do it ourselves.
With lifters?
We use anti-grav containers, 2 crew members to a container, and normally no more than 4 containers each delivery.
How large are the containers?
Krennic motioned to the office bench seat.
As large as this?
Hass considered the question.
They're standard repulsor lift containers, 2 meters by 1 meter, 1.5 deep.
Do you conduct them into the research facility that adjoins the spaceport, or do you hangar them?
Hass's curiosity increased apace with his anxiety.
We guide them in. Why are...
You're in and out.
Usually, yes.
How many personnel on the ground?
Beads of sweat were forming on Hass's grooved brow, but he managed to keep from wiping them away.
At the port, 6, sometimes as many as 8 or 10.
Are the containers inspected?
Krennic pressed.
Infrequently, Hass said, eager to be done with it now. At least not lately.
What about when you leave?
Hass added new wrinkles to his face.
Why would they?
Yes or no?
Early on, yes, they were inspected, Hass said with more force than he intended. Now that we're regulars, no.
Very good, Captain.
Krennic's spirited smile returned.
I, along with a couple of my comrades, would very much like to become members of your crew. Provisionally, of course.
Hass's heart sank, and he compressed his plump lips.
Commander, Merge has been a good deal for me. I don't want to do anything to jeopardize a relationship that took a long time to build.
Krennic glared at him. You don't want to jeopardize your popularity with the Separatists. Is that what you're telling me?
Hass groped for clarification.
I try to steer clear of taking sides. I'm just a...
Yes, yes, Krennic said in dismissal. We've been through all that. But suppose I could promise you that, in exchange for your service, the Republic would be willing to overlook some of your more questionable activities.
It wasn't the first time the offer had been made, but Hass understood that this one couldn't be refused.
Get out of jail free? Is that it?
We'll simply shrug and look the other way.
Hass asked the question he didn't want to.
What if I decide the job's not for me?
Krennic swung to the observation bay and stretched out his arm.
Pick a planet.
Hass stared at him.
What? Any planet?
The one you want your remains shipped to, Captain.
Krennic's laugh ended as quickly as it began, and he took a few steps in Hass's direction.
You're wondering just what you've gotten yourself into, is that it?
Wouldn't you be?
Krennic whacked him playfully on the upper arm.
The big time, Hass. The big time.